Blog Talk Radio.
It's 3 p.m., and I have a question for you. Do you know where your politicians are? Everything is political in your life, from the moment you're born to the moment you die. And when a politician tells you that's not true, look in your pocket. You'll find their hand in it. Everything is political. We will be talking to those politicians that are working for you and talking about those politicians that are working against you. Just because they're a Democrat, or just because they're a Republican, and you voted that way your entire life, maybe you were wrong. Because everybody is not what they seem to be. However, there are a few out there who are working for your benefit, and we are going to bring them to you. We're going to let you hear them. We're going to ask them questions. We're going to let you ask them questions. And we're going to be discussing education system, the military, science, music, sports, oh, and healthcare. Do you have it? Do you need it? Are your 26-year-olds still on the family health care plan? Or, as the regressive party says, Obamacare. We will bring you what you need to know, because this is the last word. And everything from the cities, counties, state, nation, the entire world. So sit down and get a pencil, paper, and take this graduate education experience. And we will make sure that you have the last word. My name is Michael Lawson.
Will you still love me tomorrow? Yes, yes, yes. It is Friday, November 20th, 2020. Ooh, we got 2020. The 20s are all over. 20s wild. First, second, and third. This is The Last Word. I'm Michael Lawson. And yes, we are. We're a week away from, well, 6 days away from Thanksgiving. What have you to God for this year? What have you? When you wake up on this side of the grass every day, you gotta thank God for that. When you wake up with someone next to you who you love, no matter who it is, you gotta thank God for that. When your children wake up brown on their face because they gotta go to school, or the smile on their face because it's Saturday, or it's their birthday, you gotta thank God for that. When your Doberman Pinscher gets up in the morning and don't growl at you, smiles at you, and you take him out, and he does what he has to do, you pick it up, you put it in the garbage, you gotta thank God for that. You gotta thank God for every single thing that you have, for every second that you are awake. Guess you do. You gotta thank somebody. You gotta thank your mother and your father for even attempting to bring something like you into this world and succeeding. You gotta thank God that you didn't do a prison sentence when you were incarcerated, where you're out earning a living. Yes, thank God for all of that. Even in the case where you are just barely making it, you have to thank God for that. You have to thank God if you wake up and the morning sun is out. If you live near trees, you see the greenery or the orange foliage on the trees about now, and it's dropping. And you know that that's the normal way of life. You go to be back in the spring. You got to thank God for that. You have to thank God for every single breath you take. You need to thank God for that. You need to thank God for everything that's in your life. Your life is worth living. And this year has been a hard year for a lot of people. A lot of people. There are 11,808,698 cases of the coronavirus pandemic in the United States right this very second. And there are 253,458 people who have died. I mean, can you imagine that? that many people died? Sure, in war you can. By the way, didn't the president say this was war? Didn't he say this was war? And he was the commander in chief. Didn't he say that? Didn't he say it was war and that I am the president and there's nothing like a president who says he has everything under control?
You may ask about the coronavirus, which is very well under control in our country. We have very few people with it, and the people that have it are, in all cases, I have not heard anything other. Maybe there's something new, because for 2 days I haven't been seeing too much of that news, of very much news, because it's been very all-encompassing. We've accomplished a lot here. We had a lot of meetings, as you know. But the people are getting better. They're all getting better.
On coronavirus specifically, Mr. President, in 2014, when the Ebola situation was very concerning to so many Americans, you tweeted, "Ebola patient will be brought to the U.S. in a few days. Now I know for sure that our leaders are incompetent." In all caps, you wrote, "Keep them out of here." More than 20 Americans have now been brought back to the United States with coronavirus. By your own measure, does that mean that your government has been incompetent?
No,
are you pleased
no.
with
There's
the response?
A big difference, in case you don't know, between Ebola and coronavirus. Big, big difference. It's like day and night. And I felt that we should bring them back. They're Americans. We should bring them back. With Ebola, it's very explosive. It's very terrible. We're making tremendous strides on Ebola with the things that we're doing, as you know. People are living
Let
me answer the question. But there's a vast difference in bringing, especially in around 14. Was that 14 or 12? And at that time, nobody had ever even heard of Ebola or ever conceived of something where you basically, people would disintegrate. And we're still working on Ebola. We're doing a vaccine. We're doing a lot of things having to do with Ebola. We're not forgetting about Ebola. That's a horrible thing. But we have that now very much under control, other than certain parts of the Congo where they're having war and we can't get in. So we're still working on that. But as far as the what we're doing with the new virus, I think that we're doing a great job.
Hi, everyone. George Stephanopoulos here. Thanks for checking out the ABC News.
The Woodward tapes are, to me, one of the most interesting developments in the Trump presidency. And it's almost like confessions of a mobster. It's sort of like the final scenes of any sort of crime show where in the end you hear him in late in life confessing to why he did it, confessing to downplaying the coronavirus while also just riffing with Bob Woodward about how it was so much like the plague, airborne, deadly, and could rip you apart.
Bob Woodward induced a confession of the greatest lie in American history, bar none. There is no equivalent. There's nothing that, frankly, comes even close. The President of the United States, Donald Trump, knew how deadly COVID-19 was, and he lied to how dangerous it was. He called it a hoax. He blamed it on the Democrats. He did everything he could to downplay this. And as a result, the United States is the epicenter of coronavirus death and suffering in the world. We have a shattered economy. There are more unemployed Americans on this day in September than on any day in September in the nation's history. The education of every kid in this country has been disrupted and ruined. And we have the American way of life that's fundamentally ended. Grandparents can't go see grandkids being born. Not going to be first communions and bar mitzvahs. It's not going to be tailgates. Not going to be football games. None of these things, and none of it had to be. It's important to understand this. If we had the same mortality rates that Germany did, another advanced scientific math medical country, we would have 140,000 fewer dead Americans. It's also very important to understand what Donald Trump talked about last night when he talked about herd immunity. Apparently, that is the plan, and we should understand it as the most immoral plan ever articulated in the history of the country by a president. What he is saying is that once, and the minimum number is 60% of the population, so about 190 million Americans are infected, which would be a minimum of 2.5 million dead Americans, more like 3 million, according to Johns Hopkins. At that point, we would collectively have a herd immunity that the virus would start to die out sometime in 2022. This is a catastrophe that was completely, totally preventable. And if anything, Bob Woodward is underplaying his description of it. It is a catastrophic leadership failure, but more than that, there's no equivalent in the country's history to it. It is the greatest malfeasance in the history of the United States.
Steve Schmidt, what is the, I mean, you're better at this than just about anybody in the country. What is the message that you close on around what is an umbrella of calamity? It's that he doesn't care. It's that he knew he was failing. It's that he knew he was lying about the failures. And that it's that he's choosing. And again, his affinity for herd immunity, which is what we all think he meant when he said herd mentality, would have millions of Americans dead by 2022. How do you take a message about corruption and impotence and utter failure to the country when they didn't care that he was a terrible person 4 years ago?
Well, we know that one of the things that's true is the durability and the strength of Joe Biden's lead at this point, Nicole. Donald Trump could certainly still be elected president, but this isn't 4 years ago. And the reality is the overwhelming majority of this country profoundly disapproves of the job that Donald Trump has done. And the question, like it always is for an incumbent president, is are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? And there's an incredibly small number of people who can answer that question in the affirmative. Look, the country is in obvious chaos, obvious decline. We face disasters on multiple fronts. He's a person who's divided the country. He's desecrated his office. He's weakened America globally. The allied leaders laugh at Donald Trump. We see aggressors all over the world gaining strength, gaining confidence as America's in retreat and decline. So as this comes to an end, though, right, the catastrophe we face, that we all live through, the ending of the American way of life, it's on Donald Trump, and he has no plan. The country cannot endure this for four more years, and that's the closing message that Joe Biden's going to have to deliver. He has to take the presidency from Donald Trump, and he has to do that by confronting Trumpism fully, squarely, directly, and honestly.
Hey there, I'm Chris Hayes from MSNBC. Thanks for watching MSNBC on YouTube. If you want to keep up to date.
Well, what do you think? What do you think? This man has taken this country and has personally directed the Progressive Party, or the former Republican Party, they are the Progressive Party now, towards a herd mentality for him. Not against a virus, but if all of them start acting like a herd, they will eventually disappear. Just like a herd mentality with a virus, because you can't infect anybody who's already been infected. And once you have them all infected, you can do whatever you want to them. That's exactly what Hitler and Mussolini and all those autocrat dictators thought. And in the United States of America, we have a herd mentality of Republicans, except for about 3 or 4. And what has to happen is that those Republicans that are part of the herd need to be cut up and gotten rid of. And we need a different brand of Republicans. We need a different brand of people that can fill in the Republican Party. Because the Democratic Party will not be the Democratic Party without another party. See, people kept saying, well, oh, you know, the Democratic Party, and they're the same as the Republican Party. No. No. Yes, they are. No. And they can't tell you where. Because their thing wasn't done. Because their wants weren't met. Just because their wants weren't met, they say, oh, they're all the same. No, that's not true. Because in a country that, like the United States, which is the only country in the last 200 years that has lasted, the only country that has lasted this long with a government that was able to present a halfway decent partnership with its own people. We're the only country that's done that. And we have to understand, everything comes in time. I was telling all the people over this air, and I was telling my relatives, hey, the man is going to be gone. He'll only serve one term. He has rubbed and stepped and trampled and gotten rid of so many things in this country. I had one cousin who was telling me, no, 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 the Democrats, all they do is preach about racism. No, no, that's what they who say that want to get out of everything. And of course, hey, we can't deny that this fool has done racist things. He has gone to Detroit. Detroit! It's about 75% black. And he wants to investigate their voting ballots to see if they were fraudulently put. Are you kidding me? How is that even possible? How is that even possible? He wants to, they were like voting, I think it was 69.2 to 23 point something for him against Trump. He had over 40, almost a 45% more votes for him than Trump. why would he even go there? Because that is, and I'm going to say this again, I'm saying over and over and over and over and over again. It's a distraction, like everything he does. He is a distractor because he doesn't want you to see what the real story is. And that's when this man gets out of office, he will have so many subpoenas against him. He will be subpoenaed out. He will not be able to leave this country. No, he will not. He will not be able to leave the country. And his children are caught up in it. I don't call them children. I call them con men just like he is. They're all grifters. They're all grifters. Every single one is a grifter. Everyone is a grifter. Everyone grifter. They just take things and are quiet. And they just don't understand. His oldest daughter, Ivanka, his two sons, they're all grifters. They're all grifters. And he's done it on a major, major scale. Grifters are people who come in and they want to get something from you and then they're going to run. That's all. But he felt like he did not want to win this. He won this presidency by accident. Because this is costing him more money here than he would have made. Even Howard Stern told him, don't run for the presidency because you're letting yourself open to all sorts of investigations. Ah, baloney, I know what to do. No, he did not know what to do. Wait till you see what's going to happen to this man when he no longer has the power of Department of Justice to stop it. And he's not supposed to have the power of the Justice Department to stop it because the Justice Department does not work for him. The Justice Department works for the United States of America. That's what the Justice Department works for. They work for the United States of America. And we're in a place now where we have people that he has never met and doesn't know. He thinks that he's the soul, that no one will do anything for him except what he wants. That's not true. People, there are, what happened here? What is this? You turn it against this. I don't know, I must hit something to call someone here. I wasn't trying to do that. But we're in a place right now where I you know, I just can't imagine where people are going to say to him, like they said over and over and over again when he was doing his grifting as a realtor, against one person, he was grifting. Yeah, okay. That's fine. Against one person. But what do
the
we
company,
do now?
Whose chairman is a close associate and business partner of George Soros, the biggest donor to the Democrat Party, the biggest donor to Antifa, and the biggest donor to Black Lives Matter. My goodness, what do we have to do to get you to give our people the truth?
Can you imagine that? That's who he has out there now defending him. I never called him America's mayor. I knew he was a fraud. I lived in New York City. He did nothing what any mayor should have done. Nothing. And he did do nothing. The state and the federal government did everything. He did nothing but take credit. That's all he ever did. Nothing but take credit. And people, it's just beyond belief that this man would even consider being president. And when he was told by Howard Stern even, don't run for the presidency, he flipped them all off. Hey, I'm Donald Trump. I can do anything I want. Yeah, well, it's going to find out. It's going to hit him in the ass on the way out the door. And now he's got the clown car. Now he has the clown car running everything. The clown car is running everything. Oh, you didn't know that? Just listen.
We're getting to a stage in all of this that goes beyond weak sauce. If this sauce were any weaker, it wouldn't be sauce. And that was certainly the mood at this long, winding, and often just objectively bizarre presentation by Trump lawyer Rudy Giuliani today. It featured a whole string of false claims that are legally irrelevant and that we won't repeat. But I will note that Donald Trump's own lawyers have admitted under oath in court they have no evidence of voter fraud, which undercuts much of the thrust of what Giuliani labored to argue today. There's also the obscure complaint Giuliani making that some poll watchers in some parts of the country didn't get a clear view of the counting. You don't need to be a lawyer to know that sounds like a small matter. It also, however, happens to be another one of the legal claims that the Trump team already dropped. And if you're keeping track as we do, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court already formally rejected that kind of legal claim in a similar lawsuit. Longtime Republican strategist Scott Reed now saying Giuliani is turning the entire production into a clown car.
Did you see him out there yesterday? This 76-year-old man? Did you see him sweating profusely, sweating so profusely that the dye that they put in his hair probably about 5 minutes, he forgot to put it in his hair 5 minutes before he came out there, so it was dripping down. He just lathered it on and combed it in and didn't get a chance for it to dry. Didn't blow dry it. This is how much they get. This is the man that they have out there for him. For this man, which I don't even want to say his name. His real name is Drumpf. I'm going to try not to mention it the rest. The orange man in the White House. This is who he has representing him. He has like 13 or 14 lawyers, different lawyers, before he started suing. And here's the problem. These 13 to 14 different lawyers didn't look into the plan of why he was suing before they got the job. Half of them quit during the job, the suit, because the judge said to them, warned them, you could lose your license for representing a suit that you know has nothing there and wasting the court's time. They can lose their license. Half of them turned in the suit, didn't want to be a part of it anymore. Half of them. He had suits all over the country. All over the country. He had suits all over the country. I mean, you lawyers can lose their license for representing to the court a false claim. This man has filed 31 electoral suits having to do with the election. 23 of these cases have been denied, dismissed, settled, or withdrawn. None. Let me see this again. None. N-O-N-E. None. Have uncovered any election frauds. None of them. In Wayne County, Michigan, he wants the county board members to come to his office, the White House, or his office, as he says. Because he claims that Biden didn't win Michigan. His count is 157,000. That's what the count is in Michigan. 157,000. You imagine that? 157,000. Wyoming, we'll get into that a little later about Wyoming. But it was 157,000. Now, I believe Detroit. Oh, yes, he wanted to go into Detroit. And Detroit, are those people crazy? Did they say that? We wanted this man. No, they didn't. 80%, I believe, in Detroit voted for him. 80%. In Pennsylvania, it was 82,000 more people voted for him than the orange man in the White House. Voted for Biden and not the orange man in the White House. 150,772 more people voted for him in Michigan. 13,558 more people voted for him in Georgia. And as I said before, 2,000 plus more people voted for him in Pennsylvania. He wants to sue all those states. That's just a 1, 2, 3. There's only 3 states. But do you know what the average people have uncovered? Now, I know average means more or less of the figure, but it's not way, way, way more. It's not like 5,000 times more. You know what the average number of votes that was made up by opening up an account and by opening up some sort of investigation during an election? 355 votes. 355 votes. 355 votes. And Giuliani calls it a disgraceful election. And this is after the clown in the White House fired the man who was involved in making sure the election was perfectly run. He fired him. Why did he fire him? Because he had the nerve to come out and say, this was the most safest election found. The safest election ever done. Yeah, that's what it is, the safest election ever done. I mean, how do you say that if this isn't true? The reason why he was able to say it is because he was able to tell everybody because he was in charge of it. He was in charge of it. So therefore, when you are involved in something that nobody else is involved with, you can say things and people say, well, I guess he knows. Well, you know, the President of the United States can't say things like that because there are too many other people that know. And when he says that the sky is purple and not blue, just look at it and get some information for yourself. People stop getting information. That's what they do. They stop getting information. And all this man is trying to do is disenfranchise the Americans so we can be taken over by his own clown car operator, Steve Bannon, when he gets out of prison. And I don't know if I could pull it up, but Steve Bannon is the one that said, we need to get rid of everybody. We need to change this government. We need to change this government. How can we change it? You can't change it from the top. You got to change it from the inside out. That's what we have to do. Change it from the inside out. Now, how do you do that? How do you change it from the inside out? How do you do that?
There are those who would seek to enter our country for the purpose of spreading violence or oppressing other people based upon their faith or their lifestyle. Not right. We will not allow a beachhead of intolerance to spread in our nation.
Well, the Trump administration strenuously denies its executive order on immigration is a Muslim ban. Those remarks from the president hint at the worldview behind the order, one that sees Muslim immigration as a kind of invasion or a cancer that threatens to spread. And that view has long been held by Chief White House Strategist Steve Bannon, who's widely regarded as a driving force behind the travel ban.
We are in an outright war against jihadist Islamic fascism. And this war is I think, metastasizing almost far quicker than governments can handle it.
Notice the use of metastasizing there. That's who's driving policy in the White House. As the chairman of Breitbart News and the host of its radio show, Bannon had a number of regular guests from the far, far fringes of conspiracy theory anti-Muslim activism. A favorite was Frank Gaffney, founder of an organization called the Center for Security Policy, who believes in what's alternately termed Islamic supremacism or civilization jihad. It's the conspiracy theory that Muslim Americans are waging a stealth campaign to transform this country into a strict Islamic regime. As Gaffney explained to the New York Times, quote, they essentially, like termites, hollow out the structure of the civil society and other institutions for the purposes of creating conditions under which the jihad will succeed. Again, notice the language, termites. We've seen this kind of language before in other contexts. According to Mother Jones, Bannon hosted Gaffney on his show a whopping 29 times, and he was full of praise for Gaffney's work.
You've been saying these attacks in Paris are coming, these attacks in the United States are coming. You've been amazingly consistent. And like I tell people, I've never seen where Gaffney's got something wrong. Everything you've been saying has been coming true.
What about that? Every single thing that he has been saying has come true. Well, I don't believe that. He made it come true by him messing around within our government. And these other, who are all these Republicans in the country that own governorships and are not saying a word? They're not saying anything he's doing. They're not saying anything about what this man is doing. Then they haven't said anything. So let's get to a point here, because I was so rudely interrupted by myself. The clown car is running amok. They're disenfranchising the whole American public. Just remember that. They're disenfranchising all of the American public. They're disenfranchising the entire American public. And what is the public to do? What is the public supposed to do? You are the public. What are you going to do about it? You're being disenfranchised. Can't you see that? Can't you see you're being disenfranchised? Can't you see that some of the things that you used to do, you can't do? This clown car of 8 months, if he would have did exactly what the Europeans and the Asians did and shut down, if you had to, but I got cut off then, so they're trying to find what the hell is going on. They haven't found it yet. But this man has done so much to hurt, just to hurt people. He has put his own chief of staff in, as I was saying before, to watch the CDC so they don't say things. This is just outrageous. Just listen to this.
Previous health crises in this country, the CDC would do daily, regular press briefings. The Trump administration strangled that in the crib. But now they briefed the press today. Is it possible that they're back, that they're being allowed to talk to the public about this virus again? Could it be? Well, I should note that the CDC director, Robert Redfield, was not part of that briefing. As far as we know, the White House still has their minders sitting on him. The AP, you might remember, reported last month that the White House installed political operatives in Director Redfield's office at CDC to control the flow of information and to, quote, keep an eye on Redfield. The White House literally installed a new chief of staff in Redfield's office. They installed a new CDC chief of staff who is a person with no background in public health or medicine at all. As the Associated Press put it delicately, she, quote, seemed a particularly strange fit for the nation's top public health agency, in that before the White House installed her as CDC chief of staff, her previous job was working as a publicist and talent booker for the Cartoon Network. That's who they installed as CDC chief of staff, to keep an eye on that CDC director. So no, the CDC director was not in this press briefing today. But maybe, you know, maybe that's for the best. The CDC did actually make recommendations to the public that were very clear. The CDC spoke on a matter of public concern and put scientists on the phone with reporters, and they took questions, and that's good. That's how things are supposed to run. I know I always say, watch what they do, not what they say. In this case, with the CDC, it is worth watching both what they say and what they do, because the fact that they did this kind of briefing today at all is itself part of the news, and it's good news. I mean, maybe this is CDC starting to reassert itself as the Trump presidency winds its way down the drain in the weirdest way possible. The weeks between now and Inauguration Day are going to be some of the worst weeks we have seen in this pandemic. We're going to talk.
Wind its way, as I was going to say, winding its way down the drain. Now, what are we going to do about this? What do we need to do about this? We need to do something about this. Because we can't have these people in here doing what they want to do. We just can't do that. We can't have these people around just doing what they want to do. Thank you. And Mary Trump brought this up a little while ago. Here's what Mary Trump had to say.
Turning to what's happening inside the actual White House, the president has basically been in hiding. This is a fact you may not have seen yet. They release a schedule. It's a public schedule. It often has things the president is doing, some sort of top line readout. There's usually several things a day. Donald Trump has had nothing, not even a pretend event or phone call on the schedule in 12 of the last 16 days. NBC analyst and presidential historian Michael Beschloss puts it like this. When before in history have we seen a president of the U.S. disappear from public view like this? It's a big question. We turn to someone who knows the mindset of the man in the White House. Mary Trump is President Donald Trump's niece. She spoke out long before the election with her book, Too Much and Never Enough, How My Family Created the World's Most Dangerous Man, and is someone in a, as I've mentioned before, the unusual position of breaking with her own family for what she thought was right for the public interest. Mary, good to have you back.
Thanks, Ari. It's great to be here.
Of all the ways this would have ended, I'm not sure that any of the many people who've spent perhaps, we might argue, too much time and energy thinking about this man would have thought it would have been this quiet, this much hiding out, this much what the kids call subtweeting, and having other people speak for you. I'm curious what you think, as it's become clear, not that he's processing or waiting, but that the loudest man in the world has gone mute for a while.
Well, Donald is a coward. You know, he is a small, racist man who lost decisively and can't handle the fact that he lost. He's also desperate because he knows once he loses the power of the Oval Office, he has enormous debts that are going to be called, and he has potential prosecutions awaiting him. So I'm less concerned about his having gone silent. First of all, it's kind of a relief. And secondly, it just underscores how ill-equipped he is to meet this particular moment. I'm infinitely more worried about the people who are doing his bidding. I'm consistently shocked to find that there are people even weaker than he is on the planet. And then, of course, we have the craven opportunism of Republican leadership, and they're the people we should really be focusing on right now.
Yeah, it's a great point when you look at how much support there is, even with the clear fact that he's lost and is leaving the White House for political or other reasons, to support the disenfranchisement, what I called the both racial and First Amendment free speech discrimination at the top of the show, which is ongoing as an effort, although I pointed out why it has limits in its efficacy. You mentioned what you call cowardice. We heard from someone who knows his way around pretending or acting as a tough guy, but who's also, like you, been very critical of Donald Trump. That's the great Robert De Niro. I want to play just a little bit of what he had to say.
It's like being in an abusive relationship. We don't know what's going on. Nobody knows. From one day to the next, I don't even think he knows what's going on, and that's what he's capable of. Just not respecting anything. It confounds me how he ever got to be elected, but he did. I think there's a screw loose there.
Mary?
A screw loose. That's what Robert De Niro said. That's what he said. Now, how can we do anything with Robert if Mr. De Niro says this? This man wants to take every single thing that you have ever done for yourself and claim you didn't do it because I helped you do it. That's what he wants to do. And that's what he's going to try to do desperately. Well, you know, now he has this thing now with the secretary, the secretary of state for she's secretary of the state with Secretary of State. I think she's the Secretary of State of Michigan, trying to steal their votes. That's what he's trying to do. He cannot afford to lose anything, because when he starts losing, his father says, "You're not worth a damn." Losers are for the damned. People who can't win are the people who will never win. And you can't be associated with them. You can't have them hanging on to you. You cannot do this. You want people to think you have something, well, then you gotta act like you have something. But see, when he went to a tree, this woman And I believe she was in Kansas. She let it out on bail. Hoped that this would send a good signal to the Democratic Party. They never knew anything about it. They never knew this woman. She's just a dime a dozen of women that were convicted because they had marijuana on her. And the thing is, it was in Florida where she was convicted. And because she had already been in for, I think, a theft with a bag or something like that. She got booked life for 20 years to life. Can you imagine that? For a small ounce of cocaine, not found with her, but found in the place where she was. Could have been her, she could have put it there, who knows. But the thing is that it's just outrageous. And he now is trying to subvert the election by getting these people to come to the White House. They can vacate the votes in Michigan.
But let's talk now a little bit about the insanity that President Trump is pursuing right now in Michigan. President Trump started off his reelection campaign with actual staffers in charge of potential post-election day litigation. Those guys, including his deputy campaign manager, they're not running this. Then he put a different guy in charge, a guy named David Bossi, who is not a lawyer. He put him in charge of post-election day. But let's talk now a little bit about the insanity that President Trump is pursuing right now in Michigan. President Trump started off his reelection campaign with actual staffers in charge of potential post-election day litigation. Those guys, including his deputy campaign manager, they're not running this. Then he put a different guy in charge, a guy named David Bossi, who is not a lawyer. He put him in charge of post-election day litigation, but he is no longer running this either. Because somehow a hellmouth opened in the crust of the earth, and despite all those other people supposedly being in charge of post-election day litigation, it was Rudy Giuliani who emerged from a belching fire hole underfoot. And we learned that he, fresh off getting the president impeached, fresh off the failed Hunter Biden Russian intelligence operation he tried to run on the campaign, he, of all delectable souls, would be running the president's legal strategy from here on out. But let's talk now a little bit about the insanity that President Trump is pursuing right now in Michigan. President Trump started off his reelection campaign with actual staffers in charge of potential post-election day litigation. Those guys, including his deputy campaign manager, they're not running this. Then he put a different guy in charge, a guy named David Bossi, who is not a lawyer. He put him in charge of post-election day litigation, but he is no longer running this either. Because somehow a hellmouth opened in the crust of the earth, and despite all those other people supposedly being in charge of post-election day litigation, it was Rudy Giuliani who emerged from a belching fire hole underfoot. And we learned that he, fresh off getting the president impeached, fresh off the failed Hunter Biden Russian intelligence operation he tried to run on the campaign, he, of all delectable souls, would be running the president's legal strategy from here on out, which has been super pretty ever since, just like we saw today. And honestly, with not even his campaign and not even his sort of hand-picked political henchman, non-lawyer running this, with Giuliani running this, I mean, honestly, maybe that means that this is over. The Trump and Giuliani efforts to overturn the election with weird little lawsuits, those lawsuits are failing by the dozen now. The latest loss was tonight. A Trump-appointed federal judge, Trump appointee in Georgia, blocked their efforts to stop Georgia from certifying their election results tomorrow. There was a statewide audit in Georgia that was completed tonight. It did not change the Georgia results at all. The Secretary of State saying it didn't change the results one thimble. Those Georgia results will be certified by 5 p.m. tomorrow, despite a lawsuit by Trump and Giuliani trying to stop that certification. Those results will be certified by 5 p.m. tomorrow, Friday. And then the governor of Georgia will certify Georgia's Biden electors for the Electoral College the day after tomorrow, on Saturday. And that's that. The Trump campaign has been trying these little lawsuits everywhere, but they've lost or withdrawn basically all of these lawsuits in Wisconsin, and now in Georgia, in Michigan, in Arizona. There do remain a couple of strange Trump-Giuliani lawsuits in Nevada and Pennsylvania, where in those lawsuits, I kid you not, they're just telling judges to negate the election. Just throw out all the votes. Throw the whole thing out, pretend there wasn't an election, and instead have those states send Trump electors to the Electoral College, despite how the state voted. They're trying that both in Nevada and in Pennsylvania, which is just a remarkable thing. Right? Pretend the election didn't happen. We hereby declare that this election didn't matter. We think you should install Trump anyway. That's what they're trying. And they're being just that blunt about it. On the Fox Business Channel tonight, one of the lawyers who's working with Rudy Giuliani, the one who said today that the whole election was a plot by George Soros and Cuba and Antifa. Today on the Fox Business Network, she stopped even trying to keep up the fiction of trying to argue that Trump somehow won the election. She really is just flat out now arguing that all votes are invalid, that the election is null and void. We didn't have an election for president this year, and Trump should just be reinstalled in power anyway.
Let's start out right now with the president's path to victory here, as you and the legal team see it. If you could give us just that canvas very quickly.
Well, yes, Lou. The entire election, frankly, in all the swing states should be overturned, and the legislature should make sure that the electors are selected for Trump.
The election in all the swing states should be overturned, and the legislature should just pick Trump electors, and Trump should be installed in power anyway, because that's the Trump legal team plan. And that is not a plan. I mean, at least it's not a legal plan anyway. That's something else. But today brought some new news that even as the president's legal team, such as they are, is failing and failing and failing and failing at everything they're trying, melting like hair dye into the rivers of flop sweat. Today brought news that maybe these lawsuits that they're losing, where they're losing all of them, maybe that isn't going to be their plan from here on out. Instead, their plan from here on out will be that the president himself will bring the weight of his office, the weight of the office he continues to hold, to bear on elections officials, to just try to force elections officials or pressure elections officials personally into falsifying election results and proclaiming Trump to be the winner in states that Biden actually won. First, we had this news overnight that the president had personally contacted Republican members of the board of canvassers in Wayne County, Michigan, where Detroit is. The president personally getting in touch with them, encouraging those Republican members of that board, encouraging their efforts to not certify election results there. The president thus personally leaning on local elections officials to mess with the resolution of the election in Michigan. The president personally leaning on two county elections officials to get them to do his bidding. Then, news this afternoon that the president has summoned to the White House the Republican leaders of the Michigan State House and the Michigan State Senate, right? This is as Michigan heads toward its Monday deadline for certifying all of their results. The counties have now certified all their results. The state is supposed to certify the results on Monday. They want the legislature to somehow intervene and stop that process from certifying Joe Biden's 150,000 vote victory in Michigan, to instead have the legislature declare that that didn't happen? Here's how Reuters reports it out tonight. Quote, President Donald Trump's strategy for retaining power despite losing the U.S. election is focused increasingly on persuading Republican legislators to intervene on his behalf in battleground states that Joe Biden won, according to three people familiar with the effort. Quote, having so far faced a string of losses in legal cases challenging the election results, Trump's lawyers are speaking instead to enlist fellow Republicans who control legislatures in Michigan and Pennsylvania. A senior Trump campaign official telling Reuters that the campaign's plan is to cast enough doubt on vote counting in big Democratic cities that Republican lawmakers will have little choice but to intercede. The campaign is betting that many of those Republican lawmakers who come from districts Trump won will face a backlash from their own voters if they refuse to act. The Trump campaign believes the longer they can drag this out, the more they will have an opportunity to persuade lawmakers to intervene, said the senior Trump campaign official. now a little bit about the insanity that President Trump is pursuing right now in Michigan. President Trump started off his reelection campaign with actual staffers in charge of potential post-election day litigation. Those guys, including his deputy campaign manager, they're not running this. Then he put a different guy in charge, a guy named David Bossie, who is not a lawyer. He put him in charge of post-election day litigation, but he is no longer running this either. Because somehow a hellmouth opened in the crust of the earth, and despite all those other people supposedly being in charge of post-election day litigation, it was Rudy Giuliani who emerged from a belching fire hole underfoot. And we learned that he, fresh off getting the president impeached, fresh off the failed Hunter Biden Russian intelligence operation he tried to run on the campaign, he of all delectable souls.
I'm glad to be here. I wish it was under different circumstances. I've never seen anything so crazy and so corrupt at the same time.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to get a handle on how dangerous it is. I was struck by you calling these serious games in Michigan. It made me wonder I spent a long time talking with my staff today about this. Should we see this as a game that we shouldn't worry too much about and that we shouldn't sort of breathe life into by covering this as a serious thing? Or is this serious enough that this could potentially be a real way that they're going to try to effectively delete this election?
Well, luckily, we have clowns running the show. I mean, they could, if they had chimps going into court, they'd do better than what Giuliani and team is doing, and they'd be more fun to watch. But these people seem to have a way of failing upward. And so I think we do need to be alarmed. We have clowns running the show, but they seem to kind of luck into things. And what's happening here in Michigan is they may be able to throw a wrench into the certification process. And now Trump has summoned the legislative leaders, you know, kind of like neutered pets to the White House saying, come here, boys, come on. And the optics of them going and listening and participating in this could be worse. But if there's no certification, there's going to be enormous pressure, even more pressure on them to certify or do something in the absence of this board taking action. And that's where things can get very dangerous. And that's why I'm alarmed.
Well, what about that state canvassers board, right? That is supposed to certify Michigan's results on Monday, now that the counties have certified their results. I know you served on that board, I believe, alongside one of the two current Republican members, alongside Norm Schinkel. Do you know anything about the pressure that's being put on these members?
From my understanding, the pressure is enormous. They're hearing from all kinds of people asking them to withhold their vote, to abstain, to resign so that the board is inoperable, so that there is no certification. There's any number of things that are possible and any number of pressures being put on them. It wouldn't surprise me if the president has also called the members of the state board, like he did the Wayne County board. There's rumors. I haven't been able to confirm that from either member. They don't like talking to me these days, but I wouldn't be surprised if they've heard from the president themselves.
The Republican leaders of Michigan's House and Senate, as you said, are headed to the White House tomorrow to meet with President Trump. You have criticized them for taking that meeting. I'm struck, though, that the Republican Senate leader, Senator Shirky, was asked just a couple of days ago if the legislature might sort of go along with these fever dream fantasies about negating the election, you know, overthrow the election result, put in their own pro-Trump electors. And he said very bluntly, that is not going to happen. How much faith do you have in him and in the House leader that even with the president personally weighing on them, that they'll stand up and stick up for democracy?
I have very little faith that they'll be able to stand up to this. There hasn't been a Republican in the country that's been able to stand up to Trump's nonsense over these last 4 years, and I doubt that either of these two can withstand the pressure if it actually comes to a situation where the board deadlocks, that the board doesn't certify, the court hasn't ruled in time to compel them to certify, and the legislature is looking at the clock ticking. There's a December 8th federal deadline for certification to happen, and if it hasn't happened in Michigan by that date, there's going to be enormous pressure on the legislature to take some action. And the likelihood of either of these two legislative leaders who've been involved in nonsense like the armed protest at the Capitol earlier this year, both of them were directly involved in those instances, if they couldn't stand up to these clowns that showed up at the Capitol in Michigan with long guns, there's no way they're going to stand up to somebody like Donald Trump at the White House. They're looking at political futures. The speaker is about to be unemployed. He's term limited, and in January he's looking for a new job. So ask yourself. I mean, you know, Donald Trump is a very transactional person, and there's any number of things that could happen to put pressure on these people.
Jeff Timmer, now senior advisor to the Lincoln Project, previously served as a Republican on Michigan State Board of Canvassers. Thank you for helping us understand this. This is a stark tale that you're telling, but thank you for helping us get it out to a wider audience. During a very eventful 6.5 years in that post leading FDA, Dr. Kessler helped speed up the federal drug approval process in order to more quickly deliver life-saving treatments, including for HIV and AIDS. He made huge strides in standardizing the nutrition labeling on packaged foods, which is actually a very big deal. He made a name for himself battling big tobacco. The FDA, under Kessler, investigated that industry and uncovered that cigarette companies were deliberately trying to addict their customers. Lawsuits filed by the states later resulted in a landmark settlement against the tobacco companies that was worth billions of dollars because of that research. Well, now Dr. David Kessler is serving in a new role that has its own daunting challenges. He has been named as one of the co-chairs of President-elect Biden's coronavirus task force. He's been advising Biden on the pandemic since all the way back in March. Dr. Kessler told us today that on the first day he first started briefing Biden on COVID, there had been 86 deaths in this country due to the virus. Today we are now at more than 250,000 deaths. And I should tell you, just a short time ago tonight, NBC News confirmed that we've just hit a new single-day record in terms of new cases today. Over 189,000 new cases were added just today alone. It seems almost inconceivable, but it feels like we are on track to hit 200,000, maybe even a 250,000 new infections per day soon, if things stay on this pace. Joining us now for his first interview since the election is Dr. David Kessler, co-chair of the Biden Coronavirus Task Force, former commissioner of the FDA. Dr. Kessler, it's a real honor to have you here tonight. Thank you for your service. Thanks for making time to be here.
Thank you for having me. And sorry what you and Susan have been going through, our best.
Thank you. I need that. let me just ask you, Dr. Kessler, you've been in a unique position in terms of seeing Joe Biden learn about the pandemic up close, basically from the beginning, from March. Can you tell us anything about what it's like to brief him, how good he is at absorbing information, the kinds of questions he's interested in, whether what you're trying to teach him has been sinking in?
So we would give him an 80, 90 page document that he would have before him. And this is Dr. Murthy, and it was former Surgeon General and I. And it was very extensive epidemiology, vaccines, testing, very broadly based. And we would get to about 45 minutes into it, and we would say, Mr. Vice President, we're at our time. And he said, I need to keep on going. This is very important. And there's all the staff around us. And you know, we're talking about mRNA biology. And I almost felt bad we were taking so much time of his. But what I understood, what I saw in him, you know, the wheels going on, he was thinking about what are the implications for governing, for the country, and most importantly, what effect this was having on people. It was extraordinary. We would sometimes sit there for 2 hours at a time. He's a very quick study. If you go back and you listen to the presidential debates, I think he's probably the only president who will ever talk about a reproduction number.
Dr. Kessler, you mentioned Dr. Vivek Murthy, a former Surgeon General, and you and he and the other members of the Coronavirus Task Force. I mean, it was such a relief to not see, you know, cable news personalities and like people who run pillow companies and like all the other like kind of quacks and liminal influencers that the president has chosen to listen to here. But the sort of after that initial relief, it has made a lot of us start thinking about what it means to have a president who takes science seriously, who wants to put science at the forefront of the decision making here, and who's not afraid to let scientists communicate the reality of what's going on to the public. I'm thinking about what these next couple of months is going to be like and looking at those numbers and thinking about what our hospitalization and death rates are going to be like. Do you anticipate, you and your other coronavirus task force members with the president, do you anticipate personally briefing and doing that kind of public communication as we go into what's going to be a real dark couple of months?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now, the president-elect very much believes in restoring trust, in putting science first. You know, clear, uniform, evidence-based guidance. He understands that. And he understands that it's very important to help all states, not seeing them as red states or blue states. Right? He has enormous respect for science and expertise. And that's him.
Dr. Kessler, I don't want to go into detail on this tonight, and I'd like to have you back to have a longer discussion about it in coming days. But I wondered if you could just give us a pressy right now, the short version of whether or not we should be scared and concerned about the lack of a transition in terms of handling both the safety assessment for potential vaccines and the planning for vaccine distribution. I feel like I have heard enough from you and your colleagues who have been advising Vice President Biden that I know that your thinking is far advanced on these matters, and it feels like your planning is far advanced on these matters. I don't have very much hope that the Trump transition is going to turn on anytime soon and that the existing work that's been done is going to be conveyed to you in an organized manner. Should we be concerned that you'll be very hamstrung and unable to do that basic work that'll set us back weeks or even months while the transition remains stunted?
Absolutely. I mean, it's very concerning. We can work with anyone. I've worked with Republican and Democratic administrations. We have to work with our colleagues at Warp Speed, at CDC, at FDA. We can't lose a day here.
Dr. David Kessler, co-chair of the Biden Coronavirus Task Force, former commissioner of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, an esteemed, accomplished public servant doing back into that work now in a very different way. Sir, thanks for doing this first interview with us since the election. We look forward to having you back whenever you can be here.
turning to what's happening inside the actual White House, the president has basically been in hiding. This is a fact you may not have seen yet. They release a schedule. It's a public schedule. It often has things the president is doing, some sort of top-line readout. There's usually several things a day. Donald Trump has had nothing, not even a pretend event or phone call on the schedule in 12 of the last 16 days. NBC analyst and presidential historian Michael Beschloss puts it like this. When before in history have we seen a president of the U.S. disappear from public view like this? It's a big question. We turn to someone who knows the mindset of the man in the White House. Mary Trump is President Donald Trump's niece. She spoke out long before the election with her book, Too Much and Never Enough, How My Family Created the World's Most Dangerous Man, and is someone in a, as I've mentioned before, the unusual position of breaking with her own family for what she thought was right for the public interest. Mary, good to have you back.
Thanks, Ari. It's great to be here.
Of all the ways this would have ended, I'm not sure that any of the many people who've spent, perhaps we might argue, too much time and energy thinking about this man would have thought it would have been this quiet, this much hiding out, this much what the kids call subtweeting, and having other people speak for you. I'm curious what you think, as it's become clear, not that he's processing or waiting, but that the loudest man in the world has gone mute for a while.
Well, Donald is a coward. You know, he is a small, racist man who lost decisively and can't handle the fact that he lost. He's also desperate because he knows once he loses the power of the Oval Office, he has enormous debts that are going to be called, and he has potential prosecutions awaiting him. So I'm less concerned about his having gone silent. First of all, it's kind of a relief. And secondly, it just underscores how ill-equipped he is to meet this particular moment. I'm infinitely more worried about the people who are doing his bidding. I'm consistently shocked to find that there are people even weaker than he is on the planet. And then, of course, we have the craven opportunism of Republican leadership, and they're the people we should really be focusing on right now.
Yeah, it's a great point when you look at how much support there is, even with the clear fact that he's lost and is leaving the White House for political or other reasons, to support the disenfranchisement, what I called the both racial and First Amendment free speech discrimination at the top of the show, which is ongoing as an effort, although I pointed out why it has limits in its efficacy. You mentioned what you call cowardice. We heard from someone who knows his way around pretending or acting as a tough guy, but who's also, like you, been very critical of Donald Trump. That's the great Robert De Niro. I want to play just a little bit of what he had to say.
It's like being in an abusive relationship. We don't know what's going on. Nobody knows. From one day to the next, I don't even think he knows what's going on. And that's what he's capable of, just not respecting anything. It confounds me how he ever got to be elected, but he did. I think there's a screw loose there.
Even Republicans are now calling the Trump-Giuliani legal appeals a, quote, clown car. We're about to turn to some great experts you may recognize about what this really comes down to. Let me tell you a little bit of the update. You had that theatrical press conference from Giuliani, no evidence. You have the lawsuit in Michigan that was actually pulled. That's a Trump surrender, although there was those initial attacks on the majority black city of Detroit and whether and how to certify the vote. You had two Republican board members who initially tried to block that and gave it up. Now remember, Donald Trump then calling those two people to see if they were okay, praising the move as a beautiful thing. The theater of all this continues here. Donald Trump now inviting some of those same Republicans from Michigan to the White House. Now, on the one hand, it's a little late to have plotting sessions for something that is already ending. On the other, it's very important. I want to show you something from these heated proceedings, which, again, to remind everyone, because I'm trying to be very clear about this, the Michigan issue is over. Trump's loss in the state has now been certified, but during that tussling, we have the actual video of something that you wouldn't normally even see on the national news, because we don't cover video of these certifications at the local level. But this one got heated for the very reasons we've been reporting on tonight. We want you to see it now.
I reopened for motion to certify communities, others, than in cities is right.
We want to certify the elect the way we supposed to, but we're not going to be playing games and picking on the people who follow us. That's not going to happen.
Shame on you. Shame on you for leading to this level of corruption. You have disavowed your right to even sit in the seat that you occupy. You are a disgrace.
We're joined by the Daily Beast, Margaret Carlson, and Richard Painter, who was the chief White House ethics lawyer in the Republican Bush administration. Richard, I turn to you. When you see what I just reported, when you see that Republican effort to certify everything but Detroit, what say you?
That means it's an ongoing effort that's going on to disenfranchise voters, predominantly of African-American voters, other voters of color, and that's what's going on in Michigan, and that's what is being pushed in Georgia by Lindsey Graham and others, and what's being pushed in Pennsylvania and in Arizona, Nevada. There's a consistent theme here to disenfranchise American voters, predominantly voters of color. And I just filed an ethics complaint against Lindsey Graham with Professor Claire Finkelstein of the University of Pennsylvania and Walter Shaw, the former director of the Office of Government Ethics. And we charged him with conduct unbecoming of a senator for calling the Georgia Secretary of State and asking that ballots be thrown out. This is not how we do business in a democracy. And the Senator Graham should be ashamed of himself. President Trump should be ashamed of himself. The Michigan Republican Party for engaging in such conduct up there in Michigan, it's absolutely reprehensible. And this election has been decided. Every American gets a vote, and that includes African-American voters, who once again, I would emphasize, there's been a consistent effort to disenfranchise those voters by throwing out the votes for the candidates who they support. And that's just not how a democracy works.
Yeah, and for listeners and viewers, many know Richard Painter from his years of work and time on air, but some may not. I would just remind everyone, Margaret, that's the statement of someone who was at the highest echelons of legal ethics in a Republican Party, completely rebuking today's Republican Party because it sounds like it's no longer recognizable to him. Margaret.
Yes, and I call Richard Painter for help when I need it. But I would disagree with him on one point, which is it's not, in the case of Lindsey Graham, conduct unbecoming a senator. It's conduct unbecoming a law student. I taught legal aid students when I was pretending to be a lawyer, Ari, and they wouldn't go into court with what Rudy Giuliani goes into court. And the other night, you read out parts of the judge's decisions in these various cases. And they were just throwing out the cases. They were throwing out the lawyers. That's how bad it was. And the only thing, you know, we on the other side have going for us here, it seems, because Donald Trump isn't going to stop and Republicans aren't going to come to their senses and not be part of this, is that Rudy Giuliani is now the lead lawyer. And at his press conference today, he said one true thing, which is that My Cousin Vinny was a great film. But Rudy is not a great Cousin Vinny. He's a terrible lawyer. And I thought the most embarrassing thing that Rudy would do this year was the Borat movie, but it turned out to be today's press conference will we ever forget how much he sweated while he was describing what he was doing, because who wouldn't? I mean, he has a terrible hand to play. He's not winning. Now we see that the strategy is just to stall until they can get to the certifications and what they hope are faithless electors. And it's not going to end soon. I thought it would end once all these cases were thrown out. I don't know if the Wayne County canvassers are actually going to come to the White House, but I do understand that Trump invited them to the White House.
Yep.
There's nothing left to be done to those people because now what they did is now certified. But, you know, I guess he's going to twist their arms and go on twisting arms all along the way. And can I just say, a Profile in Courage Award to the Secretary of State of Georgia. He's got more guts than any U.S. senator in the Republican Party.